the bench for the right team, and you walk away with a nice bonus and a ring. Good enough, if good enough is what you set out to achieve. You made some money sitting down. But money doesn't make you smart. It doesn't make you a good businessman. And it sure doesn't make you better looking. Most of the time it makes you soft, complacent, and mistakenly confident about your future. But you may not realize any of that for a long time, because as soon as people see those dollar signs, you're suddenly going to be more powerful than you ever imagined. Until the money runs out, the party ends, and they all move on to the next guy, and you can't get anyone to return your texts. When everything you do is about money, if that's the end result you crave, what happens when it ends? Because it's going to end, whether you want to admit it or not. Someone else is going to make more, do more, and be more because you did nothing but sit back and say, "Look at me! I'm rich!" Anyone can start something. Few can finish. Priorities change if you don't constantly protect and defend them. You stop caring about keeping up with the competition, unless you mean the competition to have more stuff than the next guy. And instead of being addicted to building your career and your legacy, you become addicted to building bigger houses and more garages and adding more names to the party list. And pretty soon, you're just part of a long list of nobodies with declining talent who bumbled themselves out of a job. Part of the commitment to hard work is knowing what you have to give up to do the work, learning to control whatever pulls you away from your mission. You start having a little success, people notice you, it feels good, and maybe you start feeling a little satisfied and privileged. Trust me, privilege is a poison unless you know how to manage it. Anywhere you go, no matter what you do, there are going to be distractions. What are you willing to give up? Every year by Labor Day, Michael would shut down everything outside of basketball and just train. 3 workouts a day. Workout, golf break, workout, lunch, golf break, workout, dinner, bed. Every day. No commercial shoots, no promotional tours, no events. Just work, because he knew better than anyone else that all the outside stuff was the result of hard work on the inside, not the other way around. Shoe deals and commercials don't make you an icon. Being unstoppable makes you an icon. And being unstoppable only comes with hard work. Take care of business. When your career is over, if you want to weigh 400 pounds and lie in bed eating potato chips all day, I don't care. But for now, your body is your tool. That's what's allowing you to do your job and get a contract and pay all those bills. I'm going to show up ready to work every day, and I expect the same of you. So tell me the night before if you're going out, if you're not going to be worth anything the next day, so I know how to make my adjustments. I need to know if there's something wrong with your game, or if you got overserved and can't see straight. Maybe we'll go a little easy on this day, but we'll make it up here and there. The more you communicate with me, the better results I can get for you. But just the truth, and keep it simple. I feel like garbage today. Fine, heard you. I don't want the explanation. If I need more, I will ask you. If I think you're seriously fucking up, I will tell you. Otherwise, show me you care about your career, and I'll care as well. Be professional. That's the one thing I admired so much about Michael when he was going through the grief of his father's death. He came back and did what he had to do at an even higher level. Dwayne, going through an ugly divorce and an uglier custody battle, still showed up every day like the professional he is. Cleaner law. When you're going through a world of pain, you never hide. You show up to work ready to go. You face adversity and your critics and those who judge you. You step into the zone and perform at that top level when everyone is expecting you to falter. That's being a professional. Neglecting your body and your skill? Not professional. Every year I'll talk to a frustrated GM or agent about some young player who's trashing his entire future because he can't get this right. Instead of investing time and resources refining his skills and improving his conditioning so he can make it in the league, he's telling everyone it's too expensive and exhausting to train all summer, and he needs the off-season to relax. He's driving a $150,000 car, wearing a 10-pound diamond watch and a gold chain around his neck like a boa constrictor, and he won't spend 10 grand to guarantee he continues to make 10 million? Sorry, there's no off-season when you're serious about being a winner. But hey, you can enjoy that off-season permanently when you're cut by the team. Do the work. There is no privilege greater than the pressure to excel, and no greater reward than earning the respect and fear of others who can only stand in awe of your results. When you're a cleaner, you'd rather be feared than liked. A cooler keeps his opinions to himself. A closer will say what he thinks, but only behind your back. But a cleaner will tell you straight to your face what he thinks, whether you like it or not. I'm always intrigued by the interaction between rival players, particularly when jealousy and competitive bitterness show themselves on the floor. As someone who has watched hundreds of thousands of hours of basketball, I know I'm not imagining it when players get frozen out in an all-star game or in the Olympics, as other players conspire to keep the ball away from them, in open defiance of the game plan and the coach. We're not talking about cleaners here. A cleaner wants to beat you when you're at your best, not when you're standing there without the ball. A freeze-out is the kind of petty bullshit you typically see from younger players who start feeling a little proud of themselves and decide to show the chief that the tribe is taking over. In a way, it's sort of amusing because, let's face it, if you're going to grab some spotlight and show off, it seems silly to do it in All-Star and Olympic games where the competition is questionable at best. If that's the best way you can get the oohs and ahs, do what you have to do. But heaven help you if you choose to freeze out a true cleaner. He sees what you're doing, and he'll never forget. Because when you're the best of the best, someone is always going to try to catch you. And you love watching them try. A cooler is liked. A closer is respected. But a cleaner is feared, and then respected for doing exactly what everyone feared he'd do. A cleaner moves silently under the surface. He makes no waves, so you never know what he's doing. You can't see him or hear him. You may not even know who he is, but when he's ready for you to find out, he does it with a tsunami that comes with no warning. You have no idea what's coming until you've been completely rocked, and by then it's too late for you to do anything but be swept away. He will make no effort to get you to like him. He doesn't care. But he'll do everything possible, and succeed, to make sure you fear him. How does it feel when you don't know what's about to happen? You get nervous, distracted. You're looking over your shoulder, wondering and worrying. If I want to get into another guy's head, I'll whisper in someone else's ear while he's watching. I may just be whispering about where we should go to dinner after the game. But now the first guy is wondering what we're saying instead of focusing on what he's supposed to be doing. Knocks him right out of the zone. Do you want to be the guy worrying, or the guy quietly making everyone else worry? This is what makes Kobe one of the greats of all time. He doesn't tell you what he's thinking or what he's going to do. He just does it. He makes others fear his next move and respect his ability to execute it. When Dwayne broke Kobe's nose and gave him the concussion during the All-Star game, and Kobe wanted to see him face to face before he'd go to the hospital, It wasn't about vengeance or retaliation or settling the score. It was about the law and order of the jungle. Two animals instinctively facing off. The Lion King getting up on that rock so the rest of the jungle could see who was in charge. One direct, silent look that says, "I still own this, motherfucker." Fear and respect. Let them know you were there by your actions, not your words or emotions. You don't have to be loud to be the focus of attention. Think of the Godfather, world-class cleaner and the quietest guy in the room, surrounded by everyone else waiting to see what he would do or say. And he never had to say a word to get his message across. Or the parent who just gives the kids that look. No lecture, no speeches. One look. Maybe a word or two. And there's nothing more to say. Complete control. That's fear and respect in action. The loudest guy in the room is the one with the most to prove and no way to prove it. A cleaner has no need to announce his presence. You'll know he's there by the way he carries himself, always cool and confident. He's never the blowhard telling you how great he is. He's the quiet guy focused on results, because results are all that matter. A thief doesn't walk into a crowded store screaming, "I'm stealing!" He comes in quietly, subtly executing his plan before anyone notices, and he's long gone by the time you notice your watch is missing. When people start broadcasting what they're going to do and how great they're going to be when they do it, it's a sure sign they're still trying to convince themselves. If you already know, you don't have to talk about it. Talk never goes up in price. It's always free. And you usually get what you pay for. The Olympics are a classic example of this. I've been to the Olympics with several of the USA basketball teams since the 1992 Dream Team Games in Barcelona. And in any sport, you can see the difference between the athletes who are already thinking about fame and endorsements and those who understand you have to win something first. The networks and Olympic sponsors are promoting them even before they arrive at the games. They're completely drenched in hype. Moms, dads, coaches, trainers, nutritionists, everyone wants a share of the spotlight. And there's always at least one athlete who can't resist. He talks about whom he's going to beat, how he's going to beat them, how he trained to get there, and then, splat. He can't measure up to the talk. His focus drains into the cameras, not into his performance. I'm sure most people respect swimmer Michael Phelps for all the medals. I respect him more for his ability to let those medals do the talking. While other swimmers were promising to knock him off the podium and take all the gold, he said nothing in response, never showed what he was thinking. When he got off to a slow start and people started to wonder if he was done, he pulled even farther back into himself, remembered why he was there, and crushed the rest of the events. That's how you intimidate your opponents without saying a single word. Michael Jordan had the best intimidation technique I've ever seen. You can't do this anymore, but before certain playoff games, he'd walk into the opponent's locker room on the pretense he had a pal on the other side and he had to say hello. Now, if you really knew him, you knew that was completely ridiculous because Michael didn't care about saying hello to anyone, especially before a game. But try telling that to the guys in the other locker room, getting ready to play. The whole team would be sitting there, thinking about facing the world champion Chicago Bulls, and in walks Michael Jordan. I don't care how long any of them had been in the game. When Michael walked in, you'd notice. He'd open that door, and the whole place would suddenly go completely silent. Everyone and everything just stopped. You could see every pair of eyes following him, watching, wondering, waiting, to see what he was going to do. He'd only stay a minute, just long enough for a brief handshake with whomever he knew or pretended to know, a quick nod around the room, and he'd leave as quick as he'd arrived. The Black Cat, we called him. there and gone before you knew what had happened. He wouldn't give it another thought. But for the stunned players sitting in that locker room, they could think of nothing else. Mission accomplished. He'd gone into their space and lodged himself in their heads for the entire game. Now, they're no longer thinking about what they have to do, they're thinking about him. Instead of clearing their minds and getting to that cool, focused performance zone, their minds are heated up over number 23. He's got the entire other team talking to each other about how many points the great Michael Jordan will score that night, how many he'd scored the night before, the suit he was wearing, the automobile he drove. They were no longer his opponents. They were just a bunch of fans in awe. A player might score 20 points the night before facing the Bulls, then 2 points when he got to Chicago, and then 20 again in the next game against someone else. That wasn't strictly about the Bulls' defense. A guy's skill doesn't deteriorate for one game. What changed? Only his frame of mind. He was thinking about playing against Michael Jordan. Wherever Michael went, there was that undeniable element of fear and respect. Everyone felt it. Every game, he'd do something unforgettable, and no one would know what it was going to be. Even he didn't always know what it was going to be. But he'd make you wait and wonder. He always gave the other team and the crowd a wow moment. Sometimes an entire wow game. In the later years of his career, when he wasn't going to dunk every night, he'd still sneak one in every now and then, just to let everyone know he could still do it. Not because he had to, but because he wanted to remind the rest of the league, "You're next." Even when he went to the Wizards and everyone said he was done, he'd still find a way to stab you in the heart. He was saying, "Just because I don't, doesn't mean I can't." Cleaners always leave behind a taste of the fear factor to give their next victims something to think about, so everyone knows they're coming. That's the undeniable edge they give themselves. That was one of Tiger's greatest weapons, knowing the rest of the field was looking back to see what he was doing, waiting for him to make his move. Every tournament, every round, every hole were all about him. The only thing anyone, including the competition, wanted to know was, what did Tiger do? But when he was struck down by scandal and injury and his game deteriorated, the competition stopped worrying about him. He no longer commanded the fear and respect that had made him an unstoppable force. Everyone else's skills didn't just suddenly improve, but their mental focus did. Athletes spend so much time working on their physical excellence, they sometimes forget that respect isn't just about what you can do physically. You have to be able to perform intellectually and mentally as well. The way you conduct yourself in all areas of your life, your ability to show intelligence and class and self-control, those are the things that separate you from the rest of the pack. Mental edge is everything in my line of work. If I have an altercation with a player, I don't stand a chance of beating him physically. I'm under 6 feet and possibly twice his age. But the result is going to be so much worse for him because I'm going to deal with him mentally. I don't work out like these guys do. I don't have to. They don't need me to be on their level physically. They need me to exceed their level mentally. I hear from young trainers all the time. They tell me about all their athletic achievements and how many years they've been working out. Great. You're physically fit. Congratulations. So are the athletes you want to train, and they're probably a lot more fit than you. Can you make the transition to becoming mentally fit as well? Are you learning and studying your craft so you know everything out there? Or are you content to just show your biceps and hope that earns you respect in the gym? Few people cross that bridge successfully in any endeavor. They think talent is enough. It's not. MJ understood this better than anyone else. He knew if you were coming to see him play, You were expecting a performance, not just a basketball game. During those championship years, you'd walk up to the old Chicago Stadium or the new United Center, and you knew you were coming to an event. People dressed to be seen, arriving in limos after big, expensive dinners, and those dinners were early because no one wanted to miss a single minute of the show. Every seat was filled during warm-ups, and every time Michael touched the ball, 20,000 camera flashes went off. It was the toughest ticket in the history of Chicago sports, and every night was like the Oscars. People who had zero interest in sports or the Bulls or basketball paid hundreds of dollars to come to the Bulls games for one reason: to say they had seen Michael Jordan. How many athletes in any sport, anywhere, can you say that about today? And while his performance on the court would certainly have been enough to earn him the kind of respect others could only dream of, the real performance started early in the day and didn't end until he was back in the privacy of his home. He made sure the game tickets were organized so he knew where everyone was sitting. He knew what his sponsors needed from him and whom he was supposed to see before and after the game. He paid attention to every single detail, from the tie he chose that day to the way his watch bands matched his shoes. He didn't wear a watch, he wore a timepiece. He didn't drive a mere car, he drove an automobile, and he wouldn't get behind the wheel of any vehicle that hadn't just been washed. Even when it was raining, the car had to be perfectly clean. Why did he care? Because he knew those crowds around the stadium were packed with people who could never afford a ticket to see him, and this was their one chance, standing outside in the parking lot, to catch a glimpse. For most of his fans, that was as close as they were ever going to get. He was the only player allowed to pull his car directly inside the United Center, but he rarely did. He'd always stop first and get out of the car in plain view of the fans, so all those people could see him. And he maintained that cool composure long after the game, win or lose, until he was back behind closed doors, at home or in his hotel room, where he was free to finally stop and relax. That's when the show ended. I tell my guys now, just once every few games, get out of the car. Let the fans take a few pictures, sign a couple of autographs, get back in the car. Takes less than 30 seconds, and those 20 fans who saw you will turn into 200, and then 2,000, and pretty soon everyone has a story about seeing you, and now you've touched a lot of lives. That's how you earn respect. Excellence in everything. Now you're not just another high-paid athlete. You're a class act. One year I was working with a player going to the finals, and I was waiting for him in the lobby of the team hotel so we could head to the arena. I'm watching all these players walk out to the bus, and each one looked sloppier than the next. I couldn't believe it. Is this the NBA Finals, or are we heading out to rob a liquor store? If Michael had been on that team, he would have pulled every guy off the bus and told them not to come back without a suit and tie. You don't need a $3,000 suit. Go to Walmart and buy 3 for $100, but come back looking like a man, not a kid who got kicked out of school. And then my guy comes down in the elevator, and he looks worse than anyone else. This is the star of the team, a so-called role model, and he's dressed as if he were going to wash the car. I hustle him into a corner away from the media and lay into him. This is the finals. This is what you've worked for. You're on the biggest stage where everyone is watching. Fans, sponsors, media. This is the ultimate showcase to represent yourself. Everything you do here is a reflection on you. What the hell are you thinking? And he says, no one else is going to put on a suit. I need to fit in with the team. If I wear a suit, I'll stand out. You probably know this already, but that is not a cleaner talking. You need to fit in. Really? I thought the whole point was to stand out. You've done all this work to be exceptional, to rise as a superstar, to set the bar higher, and now you want to blend in with everyone else? When you're the guy at the top, you show others how to act. You don't drop down to their level. You command respect and make them measure up to your standards, not the other way around. You're not here to make friends. You're here because you're the best, and you're not afraid to show it. And if that means setting yourself apart from everyone else, good for you. It means you're doing something right. Kobe has always set himself apart, quite literally. He shoots alone before the game, never on the same basket as the other guys. And the other players stay away. That's his zone, and they know it. He might decide to go join them at the other basket, but that's his choice. They would never encroach on his space. That's respect. When he suffered the shin injury in 2012, he was forced to miss some games. Instead of sitting on the bench in sweats or warm-ups, as most injured players do, he wore these magnificent suits, carried a clipboard. If you didn't know better, you'd think he was the most elegant coach in the history of the NBA, after Chuck Daly. That's how you stand out and set an example. Now you're not just an injured athlete. You're a professional. I'm not telling you to work at alienating people, but don't be surprised if you do. Coolers are nice. They compensate for their competitive deficiencies by being likable. Cleaners don't have to do that. They set themselves apart from their colleagues and peers, distinguishing themselves by rising to a higher level. When you're completely focused on one thing, your craft, it's hard to pay attention to other people. You might sincerely care about how someone is doing, but you're not going to pick up the phone to find out, and if you do, it's usually because you have a motive for asking. You don't have time for chit-chat or lunch or anything that distracts you from your single-minded focus. You don't care about being liked. You care about getting what you want. Not a great way to make and keep friends, but the only way to be truly relentless. Kobe rarely goes out with teammates. He'd rather work out or watch game film, and he'd much rather have your respect than your friendship. Michael was the same. So was Bird. They relied on their small inner circles of trusted friends, not teammates, who didn't need to be entertained or impressed, people who understood their role in the circle and who shared their friends' vision of success. You can't get to the top without stepping on some people, but a cleaner knows where to step without leaving footprints, because you never know when you may need those people again. Being feared doesn't mean being a jerk. I want you to carry yourself so you can be respected, not exposed as an insecure jackass who big-times others so he can feel better about himself. You know that guy. He struts in with an inflated ego and the hot air of cockiness and leaves behind nothing but the stale air of defeat. That's not a cleaner. That's a pretender. He might be able to fool a few people for a little while, but when the results are being tallied, he has nowhere to hide. Cleaners don't make big bragging announcements about how they topped someone else. They let their results do the talking. Do you think teams are happy when a player calls me in the middle of the season because they've run out of ways to help him? No. Do I care? No. The end result speaks for itself. See the ring on his finger? I want to be noticed for the excellence of my work, that's all. When people rip me for being an asshole or motherfucker, and they do, to me it means I'm on a level they can't attain or comprehend. That's fear. When others have to fight you by flinging insults, you've already won. It means they have no idea how else to compete with you. Now you know they're intimidated, and you can use it against them. Every time. The only people not intimidated are others just like you. And then, it's game on. Let's see what you got. To me, it means nothing when people say they like you. Like is average. It leaves no impact, no heat, nothing memorable. It's like being nice. It's just okay. But it's a million miles from respect, admiration, trust, and an instinctive connection and understanding that you're on the same wavelength and share the same objective. The greatest compliment to me is, "He's an asshole, but he's the best at what he does." Thank you. There is no higher praise for a cleaner. But then, you'd better be the best at what you do, or you're just an asshole. Can you back it up, or are you just posing? Cleaner Law. The same guy who is worshipped as a cutthroat competitor is also the guy most likely to be called an asshole by everyone around him. And not just any asshole, but THE asshole. I'll tell someone he's the biggest asshole I've ever known, and right away he points to another guy and says, "He's a bigger asshole." No, he's not, and you didn't get it. I was giving you a compliment. Take it as a sign that you're doing something right, because if you're truly focused on winning, you're not concerned with friendship or compassion or loyalty. You're not worried about how others will judge you. You know what people say about you, and it just drives you harder. Let them hate you. It only shows their weakness and emotion and makes you more powerful. You don't need friends. Your friends need you. You know whom you can trust, and they'd better never let you down. When you're a cleaner, you trust very few people, and those you trust better never let you down. Coolers are afraid of the truth because they can't deal with it. Closers dig for the truth and get upset when it's not in their favor. But cleaners know when you're lying and wait for the truth to show itself. Knowing whatever it is, they'll handle it. A few years ago, I was working with a star who had one of the most legendary entourages in the history of bottle service. A solid entourage is a thing to behold. Basically, you have a bunch of unskilled, untrained, generally inexperienced losers from the old neighborhood or some other unknown origin, guys who showed up to a party and never left, all swarming around hoping for a stray piece of ass or a free drink. Then those losers bring around other losers just to show they know how to party for free. Always free, because none of these bums have a dime in their pockets. My guys know to never bring the entourage around me because I'll go up to them and say, "Explain to me why you're hanging around here for the next 6 hours while we're working out. Go read a book. Get the car washed. Pick up the cleaning. Just get out of here. You serve no purpose." And technically, I guess that's false because they do serve two purposes. Telling a superstar how great he is, and acting as PhDs, which stands for Professional Holders of Dicks. One day I'm going to make PhD t-shirts, congratulate these guys on their accomplishment, and hand them out. Those guys will wear anything they get for free. Until the superstar gets hurt, needs surgery, has to spend a few months rehabbing, and the entire crew slithers off into the night in search of someone new to bankroll the party. That's what happened to this guy. One day he's surrounded by an entourage of grateful dickholders. The next day, he's just got me and an ice bath. No posse. No one kissing his ass. No one to tell him he's the man. For someone accustomed to calling the shots and having everyone do things his way, it's not easy to give up that kind of control. He's used to telling the team trainers what he will and won't do, and now he's reduced to trusting me to make those decisions for him. Big-name players can get away with that when they're dealing with team personnel, because they know they're messing with employees who don't want to jeopardize their jobs and usually have zero leverage to make players do something they don't want to do. I hear it from team trainers all the time. "We tried to do it your way, but he won't do it." No, you couldn't get him to do it. If a guy wants to try that with me, We won't be working together for long. You can screw up your own reputation. You're not going to screw up mine. Our relationship has to be based on trust, or we can't get anywhere. I have a strict protocol for rehabbing specific injuries, and it works. You come to me with complete trust, you follow the rules, or you're wasting your time and mine. And the rules say, you don't play until I know you're ready to play, and I'll make that decision based on my experience, not based on your ego or anxiety about getting back in the game. This player, however, thought he knew better because everyone had always told him he knew better. He did a week of rehab, hobbled onto my basketball court, and declared himself ready to play. I know my body, he announced. I'm healthy. I'm playing.
Oh, really?
Listen, I told him. If you want this to work, you're not getting on a basketball court for another 3 weeks. You're going to work out with the weights and the underwater treadmill and everything else we can throw at you until we know you're ready, and then we'll slowly get you back on the court. But I told you the plan when we started, and we're not going to deviate from the plan. Man, you can't keep me from playing, he said. You feel that strongly about it? Yeah, that's how strong I feel. For a moment, we just glare at each other. Look, some of these guys are a foot taller than I am. They could toss me across the court. But if you do that, you better make sure I'm dead, because I'm going to get back up and deal with you in ways you cannot begin to comprehend. Fine, I said. Today is your last day here. I can't fix you. I ask 3 things of anyone who walks in my door. Show up, work hard, and listen. If you can't give me all of those 3 things, I can't help you. You're throwing your money away, paying me for a job I can't do. And I left him, standing alone, with a ball in his hand. Believe me, I get it. All the media is on your case trying to find out how you're doing. The team is in damage control mode, the agent is sweating, your family is flipping out, the sponsors want you across the world by the end of the month, you're making payments on 5 houses and 7 cars. Everyone wants to know that the gravy train is still running. That's a lot of pressure. But I'm still going to make you deal with the truth. I didn't see him the rest of the day. That night he called. Okay. Let's do it. And from that point, there wasn't one day that he didn't show up, work hard, and listen. That's a champion recognizing whom he needed to trust, realizing he didn't have all the answers, and knowing what was at stake if he pretended he did. In the world of cleaners, if you can't be trusted, you're gone. A cleaner can count on few people, and if you're one of them, it means you've earned it. If you're not, watch your back. A cleaner never forgives or forgets. But I have to be honest. You should watch your back anyway, because while you can trust a cleaner to finish the job, if his next job requires him to take you down, you're going down. I never said a cleaner was a model citizen. I said he gets results by any means possible. If that makes him a bad guy in your eyes, he can live with that. He doesn't care. You don't have to like him. You just have to trust him to finish what he started. If you're already a cleaner, you're probably thinking to yourself, trust? Advice? I don't trust anyone, and I don't want any advice. But stay with me here. You need this. And if you're not yet a cleaner, you need this too. We talked earlier about trusting your instincts to make decisions, and a big part of that is knowing whom you can trust, or whether you can trust anyone at all. Because no matter who you are, part of success means recognizing the people who can help you get where you want to go, putting all the best pieces in place. You have to surround yourself with people who can operate at your level of demanding excellence. You can't be unstoppable, or even great, if you can't do that. And it's probably the hardest thing for a cleaner to do. If you're a cleaner, you already know that when people say it's lonely at the top, they're talking about you. When you've worked so hard and so long to master your craft, learning every detail and nuance of how to do it better than anyone else, inventing and reinventing new ways to set the standard of excellence for yourself and others, who can possibly give you advice on how to still improve? Who's out there to tell you more than you already know? How many people can relate to what you've done and what you still want to do? To cleaners, trusting others is the same as giving up control, and they usually have a painfully hard time with that. Cleaners have this in common. At some point, they learn they could only trust themselves. Maybe it was a lesson they learned in childhood, or from something that happened later in life, but it forced them to rely on the sheer power of their gut instinct, and they realized that to survive and succeed, they could never take their hands off the wheel. Once you let someone else drive, they're in control of where you go and how you get there. A cleaner doesn't sit in the passenger seat unless he's 100% confident he can trust the driver. And one thing he knows for sure is that there are a lot of bad drivers out there. But trust doesn't have to mean giving up control or allowing other people to make decisions for you. Michael was insistent on handling his own responsibilities. He didn't wait for a security guy, or a driver, or a stylist, or a ticket manager to take care of things. He took care of things himself. I'm always amazed to see superstars who can't do anything on their own. They hand over all of their responsibilities to others, and then they're surprised when they don't get the results they wanted. It's still your responsibility to surround yourself with excellent people and keep those people accountable, which is especially challenging when you're extremely successful. Everyone wants to be part of the action. You have to be careful about whom you choose to keep close and who needs to find a different day job. A cleaner never just hands over responsibility and says, "Here, do this." Too much risk. He'll test you first, maybe for 15 minutes or 15 years, whatever it takes, watching how you respond, observing how you work, how you carry yourself, deciding whether your motives and methods are up to his standards. He might not have any need for you now, but when he does, he wants to know whom he can snap into place, and if you've proven yourself, you'll get the call. If not, you're a ghost. A cleaner views people as if they're tools, each with unique, indispensable qualities. A hammer can destroy, or it can build. A knife in the wrong hands can kill you, but in a doctor's hands, it can heal you. A wrench doesn't do the job of a drill. It only does what a wrench is supposed to do. You're only as good as the tools you've chosen and your ability to use them to their maximum potential. That's a cleaner's talent, gathering the best possible assets, placing them exactly where they have to be, and if necessary, moving them into specific situations for his benefit. Cleaners are meticulous about putting their key people in place. And they'll take a long time to build that ideal team, but when they finally get everyone they need, they stay committed to keeping the team intact. Think about the most successful people you know. They recognize what works, and they stick with it as long as it keeps working. Cleaners rarely make changes just for the sake of change. What happens when you shake things up or stir the pot? You get random, unpredictable results. When someone is constantly changing everyone around him, the problem usually isn't those being replaced. More likely, the problem lies with the guy who can't figure out what he needs and wants. I see a lot of athletes who constantly switch advisors, or agents, or managers, or trainers, or assistants. They'll cave in to family pressure to hire the brother-in-law to do a job he can't handle. Or they decide to save some money and use an old pal to manage the books. Pretty soon, no one's working together. Everyone is bitter and annoyed. And instead of taking pressure off the player so he can focus on the job that keeps everything else afloat, now he's got to manage personnel problems. I look around at the inevitable mess that follows and I think, this is your business. What are you doing? The whole team has to have one goal so we can all reach the end result together. It can't be about individual priorities. A good team looks at everything. Should we be making this appearance or attending that function? Or do we need to be working out or practicing or getting healthy? The cleaner has to be able to trust that everyone around him has his back and isn't operating under some separate agenda. When you're an A-plus person, you want A-plus people around you, and everyone has to be accountable for doing A-plus work. And part of making the cleaner look good is having the balls to tell him the truth, even when he doesn't want to hear it. When someone says, "I need to be surrounded by positive people," I just laugh. You know what that really means? I want people who will lie to my face and make me feel better. You didn't hire me to tell happy, shiny lies. My job is to set people straight, no matter what the consequence. And if that makes me sound cold or harsh, I'm fine with that. It's made me very good at what I do. A player has so many people giving him advice. What can I say to him that he'll really hear? What's the one thing he never thought of, the thing that makes a difference? How can I make it more powerful than the 100 things he's heard before? Again, the truth is simple. During halftime, I sometimes meet Kobe in the tunnel before he goes out for the second half. I talk, he listens. It takes less than 15 seconds. What I say to him is between us, but you can be sure he knows it's the truth. All I've ever done with these guys is give them a few phrases or an idea that makes them stop in their tracks. That's it. Then let them figure it out. That way, it's their idea. That's my relationship with Dwayne as well. After his simultaneous knee and shoulder surgeries in 2007, I sent him back to Miami ready to play and remained in regular contact with the Heat's training staff to make sure he was staying on track. One day I get a call from them. Can I come down to Miami and talk to Dwayne? Sure. I get there and the staff tells me they want him to do A, B, C, and D. Got it. Let me talk to him. I sit down with Dwayne. I need you to do A, B, and C. Forget D, okay? Okay. I'm there for 8 minutes. Get back on the plane and go home. The next day they call me. Hey, he did A, B, and C. Of course he did. That's trust. I don't need to be the center of things. I just want to do my job and get out of the way. If I'm doing it right, I'm always around, and you'll never see me. The truth is simple. It requires no explanation, analysis, rationale, or excuse. It's just a simple statement that leaves no doubt. You can look at it from every angle, hold it up to the light, flip it over, slice it up, smash it with an axe. It's still the truth. But highly successful people rarely get to hear the truth. They're surrounded by assistants and security and aides and the PhDs who go to tremendous lengths to keep their place in the circle of trust by managing the truth, shoveling polite opinions and puffy compliments, and generally keeping the boss happy. But the boss doesn't always need to be happy. Sometimes he needs an honest smack in the head. You want to be the most valuable guy in the circle? Be the one who looks the cleaner straight in the eye and tells him what everyone else is afraid to say. He might hate it, and hate you for saying it, but a true cleaner knows when he's being bullshitted and when he's being set straight. And guaranteed, the next time he needs to know whom he can trust, he'll be looking for you. But if you expect the truth from me, you'd better give me the truth in return. Before I ask a question, I already know the answer, and I'll keep asking until you give me the truth. You been drinking a lot? No. Not drinking? No. Because your body looks like you've been drinking? No. How often are you drinking? Don't even answer. I already know. You need a 30-day program. If you don't do it, your career is over. You don't want to do it? Up to you. But you need it. You can't make things better until you stop making things worse. In business, in sports, doesn't matter. This isn't personal. Every year I get coaches and agents and GMs calling me for an opinion, and I appreciate that they value my input. Can he play? No. But did you see what he did at? No. But if we can get him healthy? No. Let me save you a whole lot of money in grief and anxiety. He can't play. When the answer is no, a cleaner says no. He doesn't soften it or wrap it in something pretty. No excuses, and no explanation afterward. Explanations are another way of saying, I wasn't sure, but then I went through this whole long thought process until I came to a decision, and now I'm pretty sure. I hope you understand. And if you do need to explain, do so knowing you're opening the door to further discussion, because when the other guy sees you had some indecision, he's going to try to negotiate. No is a closed door. No negotiation. Someone asks you to do something you don't want to do, and you start explaining, that person is going to ask you again and again and again. Don't explain. Don't make excuses. Truth takes one sentence, simple and direct. A question, an answer. Attaining excellence means finding those answers, not just settling for the convenient, easy route. It means seeking and accepting the truth and adapting as necessary. How many times do you see a player rush back from an injury only to be injured worse? More often than not, the trainer knew what he was doing, and the player either panicked or didn't trust him or listened to bad advice from people who had no idea what they were talking about. Your back feels better? That's great. How about everything connected to your back? You want to take care of that too? Or should we wait until you re-injure it in 2 weeks? Athletes are surrounded by an endless parade of experts on everything. They have coaches, trainers, doctors, agents, advisors, wives, parents, and yes, the dick holders. Everyone has an opinion. By the time a player gets to me, he's lost touch with his precious instincts. And when I tell him what we're going to do to fix his game or mend his body, he's usually hearing things no one else has told him. I have my methods, and I know they work. Let me do this, I tell him. Tough call for a star athlete used to getting his way and doing what he wants. Whether you're an athlete, an entrepreneur, a CEO, a rock star, or you're just starting out in life, know what you know and what you don't know. Most of the time when we ask for advice, we don't want the truth. We want the answer we're seeking. Be open to advice that goes against what you want. Cleaner law. Surround yourself with those who want you to succeed, who recognize what it takes to be successful. People who don't pursue their own dreams probably won't encourage you to pursue yours. They'll tell you every negative thing they tell themselves. Cleaners trust few people. They'd almost always rather follow their instincts and fix the situation later if they're wrong than trust someone else and kick themselves for not listening to that voice inside. If a cleaner screws up, he wants it to be because he did what he thought was right, not because he did what someone else told him to do. On the other hand, when a cleaner trusts you, he'll stay out of your way and let you do your job without critique or interference, especially if you're a cleaner as well, because the only thing he cares about are those final results. He doesn't care how you do it. Just do it. But he has to trust you first. Michael and Phil are both extreme cleaners. Michael trusted Phil to let him do his thing, and Phil trusted Michael to do it. Phil would tell him, look, just start running the triangle, then do whatever you have to do, but at least run so it looks like we're running something. And Michael would run a few plays, then take care of business his own way. And result? It worked. But when it doesn't work, and two cleaners go their separate ways, they both know for sure it's never over. The competitive drive is so strong that they never stop battling for supremacy. Beware of the cleaner you cut loose. He'll be back, and he'll be stronger than he ever was. When a cooler speaks, you have doubts. When a closer speaks, you listen. But when a cleaner speaks, you believe. A cleaner can listen to others and still make his own decisions, collecting information, processing it, deciding. When Michael and I started together, we were both learning and figuring it out. He knew basketball, I knew the human body. I didn't question his authority, and he didn't question mine. But now I'm the teacher. These guys call me for advice on everything. Their kids, their baby mama drama. How should they handle everything you can think of? They trust me. Why? Because I give them a straight answer. Few words have as much impact as trust me. If you say that to someone, you're taking on some serious responsibility, and you'd better be able to deliver. So when they come to me and say, "Yeah, I did this," they know I'm going to help. I might first shake my head and say, "You honestly thought you'd get away with that?" But we're going to find a way to deal with it and minimize the damage. If I say something they don't like, which is pretty often, it's for their benefit. Always for them. If there's a choice between being the asshole who tells them things are about to go bad, or the good buddy who lies to their faces and tells them everything is great, guess what? I'll be the asshole who keeps them from failing. They're used to people showering them with roses, and I'm bringing the thorns. When you're a cleaner, you don't recognize failure. You know there's more than one way to get what you want. A cooler accepts what he can't do and gives up. A closer recognizes what he can't do, but keeps working at it. But a cleaner knows what he can do, and stays with it until he decides to do something else. On the night the Chicago Bulls were eliminated from the 1995 NBA playoffs by the Orlando Magic, I sat with Michael in the darkened United Center until 3 a.m. He had just returned to basketball 2 months earlier, following his first retirement and brief baseball career. So much had happened in the last year. Dressed in his suit and tie, he looked around the brand new arena that had replaced the legendary Chicago Stadium earlier that season and said, "I hate this fucking building." "You built this fucking building," I said. During that series, some of the Orlando players said he didn't look like the old number 23, which he didn't. He was wearing number 45. He wasn't ready, and I knew it better than anyone else. His endurance, his shot, there just hadn't been enough time to get him back to the level of excellence that people had grown accustomed to. Predictably, there was plenty of talk about how his baseball career had failed. His basketball comeback had failed. He had failed. Michael Jordan was done, they said. And as usual, they were wrong. A cleaner is done when he says he's done, not when you say he's done. In fact, you saying it usually ensures the opposite. At the end of that game, he had a message for the Magic as all the players shook hands and left the court. He said, "Enjoy this win, because it ain't going to happen again." Then he changed his number back to number 23. And the following season, he led the Bulls to an NBA record 72 wins and the first of three more championship rings to go with the three he'd already won before he failed. Failed? How can you fail when your worst day is better than most people's best? I don't understand the concept of failure. If you don't succeed at everything you do on your first attempt, does that mean you failed? Isn't it a good thing that you keep coming back and working at it until you succeed? How can that be failure? What most people think of as failure, a cleaner sees as an opportunity to manage and control a situation, pulling it around to his advantage, doing something everyone else says is impossible. If there's a 2% chance that something will work, and a 90%